So we've gone from one interesting topic to the next. I think this is a particularly interesting question, and I think this is something that interests everyone. So Neely Shah, thank you for joining us as always, and the floor is yours.
Great, thank you, Bill, and hello, everybody. It's nice to see everyone virtually again. Hopefully this topic, though, will provide a little bit of optimism, because we're going to be talking about what life is like once COVID restrictions have been lifted and we can start getting back together again in person. I am joined here by our head of human resources, Tom Lee Wilson, whom you may remember from some previous meetings. And very succinctly, what we are looking to do is hear your advice on what the future of the working environment could look like after all COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. Hopefully everyone's had a chance to review Agenda Paper 3, so we'll just touch on a couple of things very quickly and then turn the floor over to you. First, in terms of context, I think like most of you, we at the Foundation have been working remotely for about a year now. And I think, Hans, you said that we've been busy bees, and I think that sums it up quite well. It's been challenging, but we've still been able to maintain the business as usual. We've still been able to maintain getting all of the work done to high quality on a timely basis, but it has been tough, and we've learned a lot through that process. And so what we'd like to do now is start thinking about what the future would look like when COVID-19 restrictions are lifted, as I mentioned. And the question really comes down to basically how much flexibility to have available to the staff to maximize our effectiveness in executing our mission. So maximize our staff engagement, collaboration, culture, trust, communication, so on and so forth. What would be best for our organization? And then to frame a couple things, on slide 2, I just wanted to highlight a few points there. With this conversation, what we'd like to focus on is our office working practices. There's a separate conversation to be had about what we've learned with respect to stakeholder engagement. So we've seen that through virtual engagement, we can engage with quite a few more people, quite more flexibly. Sorry, I'm echoing. Okay, thank you. We can engage much better in some ways, but we still miss that face-to-face interaction. That will need to be a separate conversation. Right now, we're focusing on the office environment. The other thing that we wanted to mention, just to focus our conversation, is that we're looking to discuss, again, when all COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. There is a period of time between now and when life returns to normal that we just need to be guided by the health authorities. We will have maximums about how many people can fit into the office. There's going to be social distancing requirements and so on. And we're looking to go past that when everything is lifted and everyone can theoretically come back to the office. And the last thing I'll point out is that for us as an organization, we are, as you know, mission focused. We're not a for-profit organization. And so as a not-for-profit, we are very aware of being of the need to be fiscally responsible and being good stewards of our public funding. But for us, our main driver here is maximizing our effectiveness, unlike some for-profit organizations that are really feeling the pinch with COVID-19 and they're looking to undertake some significant cost-cutting measures. So with that, Tom, can I turn things over to you to provide just a little bit of background, and then we'll turn things over to the council?
Sure. Thank you, Neely. Good afternoon, everybody. Just a couple of words about a background then. So one of the significant parameters that's probably important to bear in mind in thinking about the situation, how it applies to in our context, is that we're still a small organization. We're only about 150 people. And that therefore means that the input of any given individual has greater resonance than might be the case if it was diluted in a much larger number. And in particular, overwhelmingly, as you know, they're based in London. When it comes to the situation that we've all been dealing with in the past year, clearly for some people, they have a bit of a feeling that the genie is out of the bottle. We've all been going through a the world's biggest experiment in working from home to see whether it can work. And for many people, it's shown what is actually achievable. For others, it's given them an insight to something that they think might be desirable for the future. And for others, it's highlighted very much what they miss about the office. But in the debate that there is about it, it tends to be focused on the needs of the individual or the views of the individual as far as the benefits that have come from it in terms of work-life balance or saving time and money commuting, as opposed to the downsides that they've received. The fact that we've all moved from a three-dimensional world to a two-dimensional world where we're tied to a screen and all of our relationships and communications are mediated through that. And with the impact on mental health, people feeling isolated, etc. And often what is missing from those discussions, important as they are in their own right, is consideration of what the needs of the wider organization are beyond those of each individual within it. And so in the slides, you will have seen that we've just flagged a few examples of this. So one aspect is that how remote working may be impacting on culture and how difficult it is to replicate events in particular that can support culture, even something as simple as a celebration of an achievement or a leaving do, they lose some of their impact when done wholly on a remote basis. But probably the one that we all notice most is the fact that communication in this two-dimensional world has to be so deliberate. It's very difficult to bump into somebody in a corridor anymore or in a kitchen and just have a chat, just find out information by serendipity of conversations that happen in a natural world, in a natural way, in the usual operating world that we operate in. So these kind of things we're all working at trying to find alternatives to, but they do have a cumulative effect on the way people operate and how they interact. Clearly, we know that there are some impacts on effectiveness. While we've all been amazed at what we have been able to achieve, there are still some things that aren't so effective. Sometimes it can be more difficult to have problem-solving discussions or debate about things. We're obviously making a very good fist of it here in this discussion, but we know that can be more of a challenge for people. And then just lastly, one of the key aspects that is going to be difficult for us to get our brains wrapped around and that we would value your input on is what experience you've got or you're seeing in your organizations that you're picking up about how people are responding to not the separate 3D world or the separate 2D world, but that kind of, if I can call it, 2.5, that's somewhere in between, the hybrid world, where you have a chunk of people who are working in an office and a chunk of people who are working remotely. And some of the challenges that sets up in order to ensure that people are working effectively together. And if you could share some of your thoughts and experience on this, then we would find that extremely valuable. So, Nili, let me pass back to you.
Great. Thank you, Tom. So with that, we're ready to open the floor up. If anyone has questions on the slides, we're happy to elaborate on them. Otherwise, we are all ears and hearing your advice.
Good. Thank you, Nili. Thank you, Tom. I think everyone, this is something relevant for everyone. Even at the council level, you know, it was this time last year, we, I guess we had canceled the face-to-face meeting. We were preparing for a virtual meeting. So everyone knows that there would be a return to normal, but no one knows what normal is. And so you've teed up nicely. It's not, so we're not focusing on the transition from where we are now to that normal world, but it's not the transition, it's the actual return, being in a normal steady state. Okay, so thank you very much again. On the handout for this discussion, there are a number of questions set out on page 14. This is, I see already a number of people would like the floor. I'm going to start with Ron. So Ron, the floor is yours, and then we'll go to Giuseppe. Ron, are you muted? Why don't we come back to Ron? Giuseppe, you're never muted. Well, never at the wrong time. Giuseppe, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Bill. This is a fascinating topic, and I think it should be viewed as a great opportunity to rethink the processes in your organization and to further optimize them, and in fact even go beyond, because with this you are allowed more freedom to change than you would have in a normal situation where every change would be scrutinized very much. So I think this is a great opportunity to be creative, but I always like to take it step by step. It's very difficult to see how this will settle. And you are, I think, blessed by with the fact that all of your employees are very committed professional employees. So in a sense, it's an easier task than some other organizations. And I think that in my experience and the organizations that I have been associated with, it has worked very well. However, business as usual has worked better than more difficult or unusual business, where working remotely has made informal adjustments more difficult and stress situations more difficult to deal with. And I don't know how it will work out. I also teach, and I have seen the reaction of students. And in fact, I almost see not a Gaussian distribution, but a bimodal distribution. That is, people that were students that actually cope very well and students who do not cope very well. So I wonder if the performance of employees could have the similar challenge, where some people would adapt very well and some people would have more difficulty adapting. But I think that my main point is that this is a great opportunity, in fact, and I would not try to come and have the full framework for how work is going to be in the post-COVID world set out. I experiment a bit, because we don't know how it's going to settle, and we don't know, unfortunately, also how soon it will be over, and when it's over, when it's really over.
Thank you. Thank you, Giuseppe. I like how you put it. It's a great opportunity. I agree with you. Before I go to Bi-Ling, Ron, are you with us? Ron, would you like the floor? Okay. Let's hear from Bi-Ling, and then after Bi-Ling, I'll ask Sibo for her. Bi-Ling.
Thank you, Bill. What I want to share is staff will always have expectation about increased flexibility in working conditions, and many actually consider working from home as effective as of them coming into the office, because some staff perhaps may not often consider the effect on the organization, for example, the organization culture, the mission, and hence there's this balancing the management needs to consider. So probably the most disadvantages of you know, working from home is the lack of internal communication, because staff will focus on the staff on the task at hand and may not see the wider picture. Induction of new employees, and also with the office close to empty, those staff that are in the office may end up doing other organization work, for example, even simple things like answering phone, collection letters, rather than these tasks being shared or handled by the appropriate people. Of course, the advantage, you know, work from home, that will be the staff satisfaction. So it may be too early to see particular trend, but I think some key consideration include equity. What I mean by equity is same condition for all similar classes of employees, for example, conditions for technical staff or for support staff, all similar conditions for all employees. And the other thing is also quality of home office. So do all employees have an appropriate place to work? To what extent the foundation provide, you know, other than laptops, the printers, the stationaries, office chair, also the security aspect of the equipment at home. The other point perhaps is more to the foundation is insurance. How does working at home change the existing insurance? So these are the points I would like to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Bi-Ling. I mean, there's a perfect illustration of some of the shortcomings, some of the challenges meeting virtually. Ron was trying to take the floor. His microphone, for some reason, isn't working. So this is, you know, these are some of the inconveniences, some of the obstacles we have to deal with. Ron, we'll see. Maybe we can come back to you at a different point. Sybil, the floor is yours, and then we'll hear from Russell. Sybil, please.
Hi, Tyrone. Definitely it seems that the ISP working effectively as much as they can in that circumstances that we all experiences. But I want to look at that from another side. The cooperation and effectiveness or personal or the preferences may just be due to the mandatory situation that we are in. There is restrictions imposed, travel restricted for health reasons. We are entitled to work from home without any other options. So the perspective of the people or choices might shift after the COVID. We should bear in mind that as well. This might be a temporary cooperation or preference. And also there are lots of other things that has to be considered, for example, strategies for secondary hiring, whether that extension of remote working will be extended to other country residents, how will be the approach towards managerial personnel, whether basing relationship even more on the online basis rather than face-to-face, might decrease momentum of cooperation, whether the ISP still contain the institutional culture that they have created, and also whether we need that electricity to contain required geographical international basis that the ISP staff has currently had. And also considering our just previous conversation, there is new initiative is going on. If board decided that sustainability reporting will be administered as well, so that there will be new hires. There is a new topic around, so you have to team to create new teams. So doing that remotely might even be harder to effectively organize. And also there might be lots of budgetary impacts to be considered, and comfort of the personnel at home as well. How much support will be provided to personnel to ease their newly experienced costs. It might create some difference as well to attract talented new personnel as well. So considering all these issues, I'm in favor of a gradual and detailed considered approach towards remote working option. starting from pilot execution, allowing remote working for more tenured personnel, or considering the functions of the personnel, less the allow people who in the areas where less group working is necessary might be considered first as well. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Sybil. Russell, let's hear from you, and then I'll ask Barbara McGowan to take the floor. Russell, please.
Thanks, Bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good.
Okay, terrific. First, I just wanted to, from IFAC's perspective, want to add my congratulations to the foundation on the sustainability agenda. I think the direction of travel is terrific, and we are super supportive. On this topic, it's I really appreciate the slide you sent in advance. It's like it's a great analysis of what a future might look like. And as an organization, we share very similar challenges. We're 85 people. We run global boards and committees. And at the current moment, we have just such a wide range of preferences expressed by our staff in terms of what they want to do. I think it's going to have to be an evolution. And we'll, as an organization, I think we're going to have to be prepared to accommodate a lot of different types of preferences, as opposed to sort of mandating that, you know, you have to do this or that or come in 2 days a week and so forth, because I just don't think, at least our employee base in New York City, would that would work. And what I wanted to bring up is what I see as a more immediate challenge for organizations like ours, which is when things do start to open up and some people can travel and some people can't. Thinking through what a hybrid environment looks like, where you might have some people who can meet in person, but others who can't. So you'll have to accommodate some amount of virtual participation. But then, of course, you have the challenge of time zones, where I think we've all discovered that you can't really convene for more than 3 or 4 hours. And keep the time zones somewhat in sync. So we've just really been trying to think through what that hybrid environment looks like. And, you know, does it create more problems than it solves if you've got a group that's together and a group that's virtual and you have some that are in and some are out, which of course can be not conducive to good cohesion for any group. So I appreciate this is trying to look past all of that. But I think this interim period where some jurisdictions are going to open up and others are going to be closed is going to make for some real challenges for global organizations. Thanks.
Good point, Russell. Thank you very much. Barbara, and then after Barbara, we'll hear from Osman.
Thank you. Thank you to the staff for the great presentation. And I'm sure many of my fellow council members have a lot to share on this. So I just wanted to give you a little insight on one of particularly Neely's point. And I do really appreciate the way Tom phrased it, that the genie is out of the bottle. So the expectation is, okay, we can do this. So we should be able to, but balancing everything that we do lose by not being in person. So we are giving a lot of due thought to what does our future of work like. But one thing I can share is that we kind of have come to the point where we think, like Russell, everybody has a different view on what's better for them. So we want to have some type of overarching, real strong construct under which this hybrid model will work. Because we our view is if we let everybody select what works for them, we could end up with chaos. And we would be losing some of those real benefits that we're trying to get back by having everybody together. So that's just what I'm sure everybody has a different angle to share, but that's one thing that we're trying to put some strong framework around it. And I think the key point that has been raised, and I don't know that we have a solution yet, but I love the idea that you had of having the iPads up in the hallway for when some of the people are in and some people are out. We have to really educate ourselves and learn new etiquette on how to bring those people in so that there isn't the real detriment if you are not one of the people in the office. So I think we have a lot of learning and etiquette to learn to bring them in. And I did think that was a really fabulous idea about the iPad and the whole that to bring people in on an ad hoc basis. So I'm sure people have lots of things, but that was just one of the points I wanted to share.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Now, Osman, the man without the necktie. Where are you, Osman?
I'm here.
Well, Osman, I said during the break, I don't know if you heard me, the reason I put one on today is it's been about a year. I just wanted to make sure I still knew how to tie a necktie. And the floor is yours.
Thank you. I think the kids go back to school next week, so I'll have to do their ties again. So that'll be my practice. I just wanted to share, in case it's helpful, kind of some of the things that we're thinking about at S&P. So first of all, I think, you know, the working from home sudden change has worked surprisingly well so far. But it's clear, I mean, to me, it's very clear that a lot of that, you know, has been because of existing relationships that were built up in the office. And building on those, and that can't last forever. You know, as people change roles or leave the company and new people join, that's going to kind of fade over time. So, but at the same time, you know, that concept of the genie being out of the bottle, people do like working from home. They do like the flexibility. And if I give my own example, you know, there'll be times where I take the morning off and then work late into the night or whatever because of childcare responsibilities, etc. And that's a fantastic thing that, you know, people tend not to want to lose. So I think what the idea that is being considered at the moment is a kind of a hybrid model that uses the concept of flex days and anchor days. And the anchor days is where you are pretty much required to be in the office and your desk will be allocated with the rest of your team. So you're still sitting within that team environment. And I think that's really helpful because, you know, the concept of building relationships works really well if as many people as possible are in the office at the same time rather than keeping it completely flexible. And, you know, what the right number of anchor days in a week is, I guess, is different to each company or even each team. And then the other concept is flex days where you're welcome to work from home or work in the office at a hot desk location, not necessarily your usual location if that's taken up by a different team. And I think that could be something that obviously hasn't been tested yet, but could work quite well. So I just wanted to share that idea. The other thing that I would say, again, from personal experience, pre-working from home, I work with a lot of people across different offices. So I'm based in London. We have calls or video calls with various offices across the globe. And one thing that was always a frustration, I don't know how we square the circle, is if there was several team members in one office meeting in one room and you and one or two other people, the only people on the video call, it wasn't the same as everyone being on a video call. You know, the interaction, the ability to chime in, I think was really difficult. But one of the things that I am concerned about as we move back to some kind of hybrid model is that not working well. I've never come up with a solution for that, frankly. But I hope that's helpful.
I thought it was helpful. Thank you, Osman. Isabel, let's hear from you, please, and then I'll ask Feng Lu to take the floor. Isabel.
Thank you, Bill. I think I wanted to share what we're doing at ESMA, and I think we're in a similar situation to the ISB. We're a bit bigger, I mean, maybe twice the size, but it's still rather a small organization. We've run surveys with staff throughout the last year to see how they were going through the difficult period. And as Russell says, the answers are sort of a little bit broad in terms of people's feelings. We have set up an internal task force at the beginning of the year that's working on exactly the same issues and that's coming around with exactly the same topics. So it's actually quite interesting. Obviously, we're subject to other EU where other EU agencies and where the European Commission wants us. But we're still thinking because teleworking before, apart from it, whether it was, you know, contractually agreed at the, you know, in your contract, was more of the exception and you had to ask for derogation. Right now we're in the opposite, where if we want to go to the office, we have to ask for derogation. And so it's going to be trying to find the balance between the two and allowing some flexibility. Right now we have core hours, and I think Osman mentioned, he used another term, but I would call that core days. And for the issue that he mentioned with the meeting, I mean, certainly for me as a team manager, I would expect that for my regular weekly team meetings, that on that particular day, people would do the utmost possible to be physically in the office so that we're all together discussing. And then there could be more flexibility on other days. Another question that is floating around is, where is it acceptable telework? I mean, we have a lot of, multinationals, and right now people with the pandemic have to go possibly back to their home country for various reasons, and normally they're based out of Paris. So, is it going to be expected that teleworking is actually from Paris? And basically, you actually do have people still moving to Paris. And the last thing I wanted to mention was the issue with the newcomers, because I fortunately started 6 months before the pandemic, and I was very happy I had because it was very useful to get to know my team and be able then to steer them through the pandemic remotely. I have onboarded two people since, and although they've caught up really fast, they do find it very difficult to start in such an environment where they don't know the colleagues, they don't bump into, you can't sort of take them around the office to do the rounds and present them on your floor. And so that's one issue that we need to think about, is how do we integrate them in a way that makes sense and where they can actually get to meet people reasonably fast. So I think I'll pause here, because most of, I think, what I'm saying is also what other people are saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabel. I completely agree with you, especially in the point about, so you started 6 months before the lockdown measures took effect. And we mentioned my visit to London last year to meet with Neely and Lee, Hans, Sue, and a number of members of staff, many of whom I had met before. But just that face-to-face interaction was really, for me, invaluable. I completely agree with you on that. Feng Liu, the floor is yours, and then we'll hear from Trevor.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And yeah, hear me? Yeah.
Yes.
They are already in a. Thanks for the comment for the foundation to the excellent research, and also there are already so many brilliant ideas to share, sharing. And here I want to, talk about something a little bit remote. Since, COVID in China sounds like we already, not totally get over for that, but COVID makes a very, very least kind of harm against us now. So, what I'm wondering is that, or suggest is that, back to 14th century, that Black Death kind of epidemic, which reshaped the world. I mean, the Black Death epidemic, after that, the world changed totally. So, what I'm proposing that could be possible for us to, philosophically to research or try to do some research to explore what the world really changed after this COVID. Not just say that we can, back to normal and in-person conversation, in-person flight or interaction, which is not we expect. For me, I propose that could be possible for us to do some research to try to figure out what's philosophically changed after COVID. And this kind of change will reshape our way of communication, and then the way for accounting or financial information or disclosure or even just like the way we have the conference. So this is something I think we should spend a little bit of time on. And the second is that since we already, you know, get used to kind of virtual meeting or virtual conference, and we should try to generalize this kind of the way and the pro and the cons of this, and what kind of even the culture, conference culture, virtually or practically, this should be different. We should, you know, get some kind of conclusion on this and draw some kind of lessons for the future. Yeah, that's what I'm comments are sharing now. Thanks.
Thank you. Very good. Let us hear from Trevor and then Udi. Trevor first, please.
Thanks, Bill. So coming from an IFRS department within one of the audit firms, what we do is somewhat similar to the ISB technical staff. And one of the things we're finding that people are missing is those informal conversations that help develop people, but also ideas. And I know that was mentioned, I think, and Tom alluded to it in his sort of setup of this issue. But we find that is probably the biggest issue that people are missing. And at a junior level in particular, it's holding people back to some extent, in that they're not able to fully develop without those informal conversations around technical issues, around where things are going, you know, sort of picking up on other people's experience or ideas. And I think that's the one of the things to bear in mind, that when people start working more remotely, you miss out on those informal conversations that help people develop ideas and also develop their own skills and capabilities. Thanks.
Yeah. The water cooler talk and the enormous amount of information you get just talking to people on an ad hoc informal basis. I completely agree. Good. Thank you, Trevor. Udi, the floor is yours. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. Thank you, Bill. Just like Trevor, I also come from a global group in one of the large accounting firms. And what we learned, and I think this is something that the IFRS organization can also learn from it, and is that it is now much easier for us as partners, as managers, to accept that people can work from other parts of the world. This, of course, needs a lot of flexibility, both from us and from the employees. And for new employees, they need to have some experience to do that. But I think this will allow the ISB to find employees that in the past wouldn't have thought to come to London. People with families, people that would not travel. And these are usually very experienced people. And this will allow the IFRS organization to find these people, and they will come work for it. And this is what we found. Now, regarding the near the cooler conversations that were mentioned, you still need some face-to-face meetings. And you will need them, and so at least 2 to 3 times a year you need to meet face to face. But I do think that the large amount of work can still be done from other parts of the world. And when I say flexibility, sometimes I have to wake up at 4 a.m. to do a call, and sometimes other people have to do it, or to keep late until 1 a.m. But I do think that it can be done. And what you get from this are employees that otherwise you won't be working with. This is my 2 cents.
Thank you, Udi. Well put. Martin Schlömer. Martin, the floor is yours, and then we'll hear from Ken.
Thanks, Bill. I guess the ISB is fighting for talents. So for me, the question would be, what is the wish of that talents first to see and hear what they aim for? And there might be differences in terms of more junior ones or more senior ones, depending on the degree of detail tasks they are working on. Differences of young and old people, differences with regard people caring for kids and not. As an employee, I guess, also the ISB has to take care for the physical health. So specifically, if people are working from home, what is the working environment? And also mentally, what does it mean? Does it mean a 24/7 availability, or are there certain times where an unavailability is expected or can be expected? And it goes even along with the question, what is the appropriate dress code for internal or probably external meeting? So I do not believe that there is a one-fit-all methodology at the end. I guess trust and experimentation is quite important from the beginning onwards. And experience shows that people are quite flexible with regard to change. However, I believe that with a standing organization, it might be possible more or less in a digital 1.0 way to switch to fully virtual. However, if you try to set up new teams, to onboard team members to a greater extent, then a kind of, say, physical meeting is necessary. And for sure, the question is how to deal with an informal network which might be missing, because people then get isolated on their tasks. And on their tasks is the project they are working on. However, in the coffee kitchen or so, they also might become aware of other projects going on and more or less feel more integrated in the overall progress of the institution. So a kind of, say, team camp or however you might call it might be important. So I guess these are the predominant thoughts beside the idea what kind of saving potentials are possible for the organization, or what kind of investments are necessary in the first one with regard to duplicate office equipment or whatever would be necessary then that people can really work from home. But again, it's quite important that no one gets discriminated in that way, that there is a certain privilege for certain ones and not for other ones. That are my thoughts. Thanks.
Good. Martin, thank you very much. Ken, and then Torsten, but Ken first.
Thanks, Bill. In a sense, we're in the environment now that you've been talking about. We've been very fortunate in New Zealand that our lockdown lasted from March until June. And so really what I'm thought I'd provide us some personal reflections on what work's been like since we've actually come back. And I think the first comment is that the day the office opens again, and everyone, that's a day of some euphoria. You know, everyone is happy to see each other. Everyone talks about their experiences. It's a great day. You know, enjoy it. Don't expect much productivity, but it's all those water cooler conversations happen, you know, just and it is great. So enjoy that. The second thing is that we learned to work online, and some people really like to do that quite a lot. Others like to do it when they know they're not having much contact. And I think the other thing is no one now goes into the office if they've even got the hint of a sniffle. So that actually sort of means that although we have the sort of anchor day that Osman talks about, we have one day a week that's an anchor day, the reality is we are working in a hybrid sense. And that kind of means a few things. It means there's new skills that have to be learned and new systems that have to be in place. You need a good system to tell you if someone's in the office or not. And, you know, there are particularly in a hot desk environment, which we're in, you know, there's a system we have which gets quite a lot of use. The meetings issue is an interesting one. There's skills in working a hybrid meeting. And what I'm observing more and more is that because 90% of meetings now are hybrid, when you're having a hybrid meeting and you're sitting in a meeting room, everybody's got a laptop with the Zoom and the MS Teams in front of them. So it's sort of not a double up kind of thing. You're doing both, but the people in the room, yes, they're getting the benefit of the people in the room, but they're also working on hybrids, and that seems to be about the best way we've learned to manage it. But there is additional skills required for the chair of those meetings and the how you orient those meetings, etc. That are pretty critical. I think the third thing is training is quite difficult to be done on a hybrid basis, and that's, you know, particularly where you have the sorts of trainings where you're doing work group exercises and things like that as part of a course. We haven't worked that out. We're still getting to grips with kind of regularizing things that we did during the lockdown period. You know, we're only now initiating a process of checking about the security of devices that were connected to laptops and that are being connected to laptops at home, you know, because there is a security issue with printers and things like that we're really just sort of catching up on now. Most people really do value the face-to-face contact, and in our circumstances, it might not be the case around the world. We went back to working in many ways as we were beforehand. It was a relief to get back to that. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. Euphoria. No, I can believe that. Thanks again, Ken. Thorsten, let's hear from you, and then I'll ask Andrew to take the floor. Thorsten.
Thank you, Bill. Just a couple of observations. I'm really looking forward to that euphoria day when people come back. Just a couple of things from my experiences with the EAA committee work. Those tend to be more senior people. And my research team at the University of Munich, which tend to be more junior people. I have the experience that home office versus physical presence works differently depending on the type of interaction. The type of meeting especially that we have, the larger the meetings, the more people seem to have a hard time keeping their attention on them. It's not because they're, you know, not motivated or not well-intended, but because it's just too tempting when you are in a large meeting where you can free ride basically on others and you're not constantly, you know, being active, that you're going to do email on the side or something else. So it tends to fracture people's attention spans and ability to concentrate, and they tend to feel that as well in their productivity and in their happiness too. So that's something that where I've learned that I'm not going to add too many people to a meeting, not more than really need to be there. So I try to keep meetings short and small. The other thing is that I sometimes hear people complaining about missing the contact to others, but that is not something that we typically hear from them proactively. It is something that we really have to ask about. So I tend to try and make available times without an agenda. So meetings that have no agenda or no purpose other than catching up with each other, where people actually know that they can share stuff that is not directly related to any ongoing project, because that is the closest approximation that I've seen to the kind of informal talk that we otherwise have at the water cooler coffee maker and so forth. And the third point I want to make, really, I'm really believing in Udi's and Martin's points for the IFS Foundation to really take the opportunity to become a more attractive, even more attractive employer, including a part-time employer for people from anywhere. I think that is really a great point, and ISB should be strategic about that. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Well said. Andrew, please, and then we'll hear from Leslie. Andrew.
Thanks, Bill. I don't want to really repeat a lot. There's been an awful lot of very good comments made, but maybe if I just pull out two or three points that have been relevant to me in running my team. I mean, we've been talking, a few other auditors and accountants talking. I think the thing that everyone really struggles with is the lack of the sort of being in that environment where conversations are going on. And to me, that's not just the conversations you're part of with your colleagues, but it's overhearing other people's conversations and learning from them. And that's, I think, a real problem for people starting in teams, for the vast number of graduates, for instance, that we take into our organisation. But even in an organisation like the IASB, if you're looking to onboard people, if they're not in there participating in the team and overhearing those conversations, it's doubly difficult to learn. I think the other thing, of course, which a lot of organisations like ours are looking at is use of office space and whether we need the office space. So that may well be something which many organisations will bring as a constraint on the way in which a lot of us work, because I think a lot of them are obviously looking to save the cost of that vast office estate that we all use. So that challenge is coming. I think secondee, someone mentioned secondees, and I guess part of the appeal maybe for people who want to join the ISB is the opportunity to come to London to work as a team. So much as you might get access to people from other parts of the world, you know, if those people aren't able to come and participate in the team that's there regularly, that may well be a hindrance to them. And the final thing, just a boring accountant's comment, which I must add, because we've run into this a few times. As the ISB, do just look out for the tax consequences of having people working overseas on a permanent basis. That can be a constraining impact, and certainly it's been an issue for us this year.
Andrew, an excellent point. As someone who had lived overseas for 20 years, I wholeheartedly agree. It's an important consideration, the tax consequences. Thank you for raising that. Leslie, interested in hearing what has been your experience?
Okay. So we're undergoing a process similar to the ISB in that we want our return to the office to be an open and collaborative and transparent process. So it's not going to be determined on a case-by-case basis by certain supervisors. But one of the things that we're finding is that our perceptions are influenced by our experiences. And just as their staff who were onboarded during the pandemic have never been in the office, we start almost like the Stockholm syndrome, that we start identifying with our captor. So it's hard to be objective about what we want life to be like in the future, because we think, oh, I'm being held prisoner by Zoom. It's not so bad, right? So we're optimists and we tend to be very flexible in adjusting, but we don't really understand what we're missing. And so that's part of it. The second part in trying to bring people into the conversation is we realize that it's hard to be objective because our perceptions about how effective we can be are influenced by our own preferences, that we, you know, prefer to work at home and we don't like to commute, and the things that we do and do not like and what we're experiencing right now. So one of the things that we've added to our study is a 360 degree review. So we're asking employees to reflect on how effective they can be if they're on a remote basis. And then we're asking their key constituents, whether it would be the people that they supervise, the people who supervise them, or their peers, to assess the same with respect to that position. And then I'll just share that, you know, we have three primary missions at the university, which is research, teaching, and service. And on the teaching dimension, I would like to think that I'm brilliant at teaching online and that I've developed and that it's going fine. But if you ask my students, not so much. And I'll also share with, I'm back in the classroom in person now. And I am so happy to be back. But prior to going back, I was not looking forward to it because it just seems so much more efficient online. But now that I'm back in the classroom, I believe I belong in the classroom. So I just wanted to share those observations.
Thank you, Leslie. Garth, and I think after Garth has his say, I think I'll say a few concluding remarks, and I'll ask Tom and Neely if they'd like to respond or offer their own reflections. But first, Garth.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Yeah, I think most of it's been said. I think that just an observation would be that I think we've already here seen a number of different circumstances. And I think my advice would be to be prepared to be dynamic. This is a dynamic environment, and social norms will continue to evolve as we move through the pandemic. And what will become a market norm, particularly for hiring talent, will to some extent drive what you have to put in place. So I'd encourage the whatever we do to be dynamic and perhaps don't be too rigid. And when we roll things out, understand that they may be changed down the line rather than adhered to. We found that it's been a great opportunity for many of our staff to actually be involved in meetings. So the meetings typically can involve a lot more people and a lot more junior people in meetings where we would typically have a lot of senior people. And that's been very good for experience sharing and for people to see how the piece of work they do actually ends up in an end product that is part of a meeting. And that's been a great learning for them. What we have seen is that there's a need for more structured time and seeing, rather than tasks, time to come together and build relationships. So we're seeing an environment where staff will be given a lot more flexibility and that will be demanded, but that there will need to be specific times set aside for things like relationship building, bringing joiners on board, and in fact for informal time and idea sharing. I think the comment about having hybrid meetings where people are physically there and on a screen is well made. And I think there's a huge amount of training that needs to go on. I've seen very little training going on for people who are at one end of a video conference and how they participate and how to chair meetings. I think that will be pretty cool stuff. But overall, I think my view is that this is gonna be something where we need a lot of flexibility, but there have to be standards of how people operate. So you have to have a certain network connection. Or one thing that we envisage is that in suburbs, there will be communal offices where people will go to rather than being in their home, for example, and a certain standard for those offices. So rules and standards are needed, but with as much flexibility as possible. That's really what we think.
Thank you very much, Garth. That was, as I had expected, that was I thought it was a really interesting discussion. I think everyone picked up on the concept that this is an ideal opportunity. It's been challenging and there might be some resistance to returning to office. Although what we've heard from Ken, the day one impact, euphoria, Leslie had a similar comment. So, but I think the idea is that this is a real opportunity to think about the most efficient, the most effective way to work. Several of you pointed out the James did as well in writing, but several people picked up on the fact that it's a chance to do a 360 degree review. The need to be open-minded, flexible, but at the same time provide framework, provide standards. That's also important. The recruiting issue is very interesting. Definitely some challenges with recruiting, but as Udi and others have said, this is also an opportunity. Maybe it's a part-time arrangement, working from a distance. So there are challenges, particularly relating to culture and indoctrinating people into the culture of the organization. But there certainly are opportunities here. So I think that was a very good point as well. Osman, Isabel, Maria Angeles have said there are different models, and it's up to each organization to figure out what works best. Osman said flex days, anchor days. I think Isabel referred to them as core days. Maria Angeles said 2 to 3 days a week in the office works for her organization. So there are different ways to do this. And it's up to each organization to figure out what that is. But the idea is you have to give this some thought. Training is going to be an issue. I mentioned already culture, office space. That's something I've been thinking about quite some time. What does it mean from the physical office space perspective? Tax consequences. I think that's a very good point. I could go on. There's really so many interesting points. Tom or Neely, is there anything you'd like to respond to? Any reflections of your own? I hope this was helpful.
Yeah, I really appreciate everybody's feedback. It was tremendously helpful. I mean, Bill, your summary was great, and very consistent with my notes as well. It's reassuring. It sounds like some of the things that we've been talking about on our committee are the very same things that many of you have been talking about. But I noted a number of additional things that we'll have to take back to our committee and discuss. I think the one thing that I'll just mention, it came up a few times, this idea of being a more attractive employer and possibly having some of our staff located overseas. We do have staff in our Asia Oceania office in Tokyo, but beyond that, we find it very difficult, and Tom, you're better placed to speak to this, but it's been very difficult for us to have staff located overseas, because not only with the tax consequences, there are also concerns about labor laws, social security, not concerns, but just considerations about labor laws, social security laws, et cetera, that make it very difficult for us to administer people located in a lot of different countries, as well as having the different time zones. So for us, that's almost been a little bit of a non-starter, but enough of you have mentioned it that I think, Tom, maybe we can just have another conversation about that and see if there's anything more for us to think about there. But any further thoughts, Tom?
Yes, I completely agree that there is significant opportunities both from the way you organize work and organize the way interactions happen within the organization itself, but also the opportunity to involve people who you're currently not tapping into. And I thought those were extremely well-made points. We're very alive to the issues to do with tax, social security, employment law, dare I say immigration. All of those are significant disincentives because of the complexity and cost that they add to those problems. So we're really interested in any kind of solutions that people have found to help tackle those real barriers. So please let us know any genius thoughts that you have on that front. I was very intrigued to see the extent to which there was commonality in views about the challenges of the hybrid environment, just how important the role of the chair is for that. And if you're the person who is outside of the room and everybody else is inside the room, you really know, you really feel that. That's something that we are already aware of and we wanted to focus on. There's a particular issue that we've been discussing, which is going back to my kind of starting point, that people's natural focus on this is what's best for me and what works for me, and that colours my view. And I extrapolate from that as to what I think the whole of the rest of the organisation should do. So what I've been trying to focus on is what would be best for the organization for me to do. And therefore, I think that the route into that of taking a 360 style questioning approach that involves other people in answering that question is a very intriguing one for us to look at. So thank you very much indeed. I mean, there's some a number of very useful ideas in there, as well as some, I think, reassurance that we're not kind of completely bonkers in the the aspects that we're focusing on, and that you're identifying very similar concerns and opportunities.
Good. Thank you very much, Tom and Neely. This is a such an important aspect of the way everyone does business, not just the IFRS Foundation, but everyone on this call. So I thought it was really good that you teed up this topic in the way you did. So I'm grateful for that, and I think we'll be hearing more about this as time goes on. So thank you again. Now that. That will conclude the public session of this meeting. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about my assessment of the advisory council. So Simon, can we conclude the recorded open session at this point?